over the holidays, a friend of mine was asking me about how exciting he was in his company. He's an investment banker in 5G, and then he'd had an industry analyst come speak with them, and they were pretty excited about the future 5G. And I asked him who the industry analyst was, and it was a social scientist whose name will remain unmentioned on this podcast. But I was fairly shocked, and I was shocked because of how many people are getting paid to dispense information about 5G, particularly since if you've been working in the wireless industry for a while, you're quite aware that the actual difference between 5G and 4G is probably the smallest difference in actual technology between generations ever. So 1G to 2G was analog to digital, huge. 2G to 3G was essentially digital voice to early data, let's put it that way. I've got a megabit a second or so I think you could get on maybe a few megabits a second, I don't know, on a 5 megahertz WCDMA channel. And then 4G was really where things took off around the same time as the iPhone came out. So those new network and new device came out at the same time, which worked well because, let's face it, LTE is a pretty kick-ass technology. OFDMA works really well. And they basically added a lot to what had been going on with a lot of folks working on WiMAX, also OFDMA, but never quite took off as an IEEE technology. And so just want to spend a few minutes on this inaugural Spassmeister podcast and talk about something I saw, which from a technical area that I'll read a little bit of here in a minute, which I thought was pretty interesting. So let's get going here with a copy of the article, Why 5G Will Fall, Short of Expectations from the Information. So I'm going to paraphrase as I go through this, but it's some pretty interesting information. Been a pretty good viewpoint. It's not purely technical. And so the article starts out about the hype, which is true. And in 2020 here, we're going to have a lot more hype and a lot more phones. And this is kind of normal in the industry. It's kind of how quickly the phones get out there. What you don't want is what GSM had when it got rolled out in 92, which was an entire network in the country of Germany and no handsets. So that didn't work too well. And as much as I have put down this hype, I had to go have a 5G handset. And sure enough, my Note 10 5G Plus lit up when I was in Miami the week of the Super Bowl for a little meeting with some colleagues. And I was pretty excited. So I measured 1.5 gigabits a second downlink, about 40 megabits per second uplink, and ran a whole lot of tests because everyone wanted to see how it worked, who I'd worked with currently and in the past and so forth, my colleagues. And I noticed from a beamforming standpoint, this is the 28 gig ultra wideband Verizon service, that it didn't work very well right underneath the base station, as expected. Worked okay. I think I was getting some reflection. But I certainly didn't have a beam aimed at my phone. But once I was about a few meters away from the bottom, 5 or 10, then it really sped up. And like 20 meters away seemed perfect. And that's where I got the 1.5 gig download speed. But the fact is, this is really more of a showcase, this 28 gig access layer. It's not going to work in the building next to the cell site if there's low-E glass. It's really not going to work if I'm whipping down in a fast car down that road. Maybe it hands off. But really, it's relying on the 4G network and this non-standalone configuration to manage mobility. It did some handoff. I got that question a lot. But since I was walking, it was not exactly a high-speed handoff. And so, you know, here we have a $1,400 phone on a Verizon network on a dedicated cell site that has dark fiber stream to it. It's just not scalable, right? And so, you know, I know Verizon said they're going to launch a 5G service in 30 cities. But really, this is what you're going to get. A few nodes on a busy street that's really more of a showcase. When they launched in Manhattan, a single neighborhood in the Bronx, according to the map of the website. And it was kind of like what they did in Atlanta and Detroit and Houston and so forth. So you had a few blocks with some 5G, but it wasn't exactly widespread. And if you think it through, you could have just put Wi-Fi 6 in a Starbucks with a good fat pipe on the back end for backhaul, and you get the same thing, right? You're going to get a gigabit and a half. Where I work in the parking lot, we did a little experiment using a prototype, proof of concept, Qualcomm Wi-Fi 6 access point using a Y gig, actually Terragraph 802.11ay. Backhaul and work like a champ. So we had some early AY gear on our proof of concept equipment in the parking lot going to a Wi-Fi 6 Samsung access point with all powered by Qualcomm. And it was going to a Samsung Galaxy S10 in the parking lot. So we had 802.11ay backhaul going to 802.11ax access, going to a 802.11ax chipset in a Galaxy S10. 1.6 gigabits a second, which is essentially the same as I measured on 5G, but you don't see much fanfare with Wi-Fi 6. In fact, it's pretty much invisible compared to 5G. Clearly you have a $1 trillion industry that every one of the players is going to benefit from, right? So the big OEMs, in this case, Ericsson and Nokia, but globally, of course, Huawei as well, and to some extent, Samsung, who's a great company and going to have some good offers in here with 5G infrastructure. Hopefully, they can crack into something above a, kind of the low single digits in terms of their market share. But at any rate, you'll have those large companies deploying 5G. But you could do the same thing, right? You could do the same thing with you know, a cage and a data center and some fiber and a Terragraph system and Wi-Fi 6. You could be doing the same thing. You could cover the same exact area more, in fact, using Wi-Fi 6 with a Terragraph system. So, and you can see that today over in Penang in Malaysia, where there's a Terragraph system on some proof of concept prototype radios offering 700 megabits a second for free in the city. So that's what you can do. So if you, and when you use 5G, one of the things you notice is you want to download a podcast, it pretty much downloads the moment you click the download button. And so it's pretty exciting. But streaming a movie, you're really not going to see a big difference on your mobile device or your tablet or even your video player at your house, your big fat 65-inch high-res 4K, 8K TV. You're really not going to notice, right? It's really that the pipe that's behind the radio that's determining the how robust the service is. And now this is all millimeter wave. Of course, widespread, more usable spectrum is in the so-called mid-band, C-band, which is above what Sprint owns, in the old MMDS band, 2.5 to 2.69. So this band has got a couple, 3 gigahertz, I think, in the C band, which is in the, let's say, 3 to 6, 4 to 7, I think 3.5 to 6.5. So there's a few gigahertz in there, which split up amongst four carriers is going to give each one, you know, 800 megahertz or so, which is not different than what Verizon's got in 28 gig and 39 gig band. There's 3 gigahertz in the 26 band as well. But really, you know, what someone told me about a millimeter wave business I was trying to start, it was actually a CEO of Northwestern Fiber Company, and said that really what we had was a Goldilocks problem. And I'm noticing that someone else is using this term as well, because this isn't 4G LTE that works, you know, in the elevator or the parking garage. You know, this is going to work in extremely, you know, the princess and the pea type situations. You need that perfect location right next to the cell site with nothing in between you. Now, the mid-band airwaves, which is what Sprint and T-Mobile could use in their 2.5 gig, that would work. They should, between, you know, T-Mobile's 600 meg refarming they're talking about, along with this big fat 180 megahertz band that Sprint owns, Jesus, that's a pretty good leg up for those guys. So they should be able to be fairly competitive with the right management team in place, which has always been a challenge for Sprint. And I assume the big dog in this merger is going to be Legere. So So just a couple other things I wanted to point out. I'm kind of glancing at this article, which is a lot less interesting than I thought it was going to be. They're complaining about power consumption on 5G, and I've heard that as well from some friends at Qualcomm who are doing some tests. And this is very common, right? You have the new technology. It's basically sitting in an ice bucket as you go between floors and different test labs just to keep the thing up and running. But that's all solvable. These are just engineering developments, and you want the performance first, and you can lower the power consumption and fix everything else about the technology later. So that's, you know, 5G in a nutshell, and we'll call it quits here after 10 minutes. But let's go to these subscriber comments, and I'm going to read one subscriber comment from none other than George Gilder himself, author of Telecosm and other predictions that didn't quite come true, but were interesting reading. Anyway, so here from Mr. Gilder, I'll just read it verbatim. As wireless technology advances, it is increasingly migrating to unlicensed spectrum in the ISM bands, including Wi-Fi. The most significant impact of 5G will be the opening of additional gigahertz spectrum in unlicensed bands. This spectrum will be increasingly accessible through software-defined cognitive radios, survey spectrum, and send packets to available spaces. So true. The key development is not 5G, but Wi-Fi 6. God bless you, George Gilder. I'll have to make a comment on that. And with that, we will end this baby's first podcast.